Send thanks again to Frank Chile for helping put this program together with Dr. Ray. Now, the presidential contender from Whittier, Dr. Green, filmed all the giant rock UFO conventions from apparently the first one to the very last one. And I'm wondering, Ray, if these films exist, if they've been transferred to DVD, whatever. And I assume he had filmed them with sound. I'm just guessing, but he's a scientist, so I would think he'd want to get interviews and so forth. This is all very interesting. Frank informs me that, and you already knew this, I'm sure, that Green knew Howard Hughes. Or, I mean, excuse me, Van Tassel knew Howard Hughes, and Hughes would fly out there to spend some time with Van Tassel. Van Tassel is just the type of person that Howard Hughes would find to be fascinating. And maybe Howard Hughes knew a whole lot more about our visitors than anyone has ever guessed. That's a possibility.
Definitely. And I have some reports from inside the government about some of the findings that were made out there, and it was believed that it was connecting to a wormhole in space.
Hmm.
That's an opening in space-time that leads to another point in space-time.
Sure.
So, you know, scientists just say these are theoretical because nobody's observed one, but Van Tassel and people out there have observed them and seen extraterrestrials just materializing and dematerializing. And, you know, one time people thought black holes were theoretical, but now we know that they exist in plenitude in space.
Mm-hmm.
But those are objects with very strong gravitational forces.
Mm-hmm.
And the wormhole is something entirely different. This is just like poking a hole in space and time.
Right. Scroll down to the bottom of the page that we're on, and you'll see a presidential campaign flyer from Gabriel Green. America needs a space age president. Very clever. Very smart.
Yes, he published the Flying Saucers International, or later UFOs, UFO International, and had connections with all of the flying saucer clubs in the United States and around the world, especially focusing on the contactees and their message about the utopian society that we could build here on Earth, modeled after advanced civilizations on other planets.
Listen to his campaign planks. Progress instead of prattle. Principles instead of personalities. Answers to problems instead of only talk about them. Results instead of promises. Ideas instead of double talk and ballyhoo. Solutions instead of stalemates. Survival instead of annihilation. Peace instead of pieces. Morality against moral degeneration. Issues instead of smears, sneers, and jeers. Abundance for everyone instead of poverty and waste. Oh, how times haven't changed. A better tomorrow instead of no tomorrow. Inspired leadership instead of rule by political opportunists. This is 1960, right? 60?
Yes, this is 1960. He tried it again in 1972 also.
Leadership by enlightened direction rather than by popularity polls and pressure groups. This is fascinating. A workable plan for peace rather than directionless confusion. Hope and national purpose instead of apathy and hopelessness. Government by moral and universal law rather than by military expediency and special interests. Competition for the minds of men with new ideas instead of bombs and bullets. Economic security and true freedom instead of economic slavery. Every man a rich man tomorrow in relation to his effective purchasing power today. A passport to paradise on earth instead of oblivion. A true stairway to the stars instead of missile fizzles and launching pad blues. What may be your last chance for a real choice? You want that? Vote for Gabriel Green, your write-in space-age candidate. His heart is with the people. Yeah, I'd vote for this guy. No doubt.
Oh, yes. He was a true visionary. And what he was saying about there not being a future, we know from revelations from various contactees that in some timelines there is no future, and you see inhabitants of other planets going back in time to seek out refugee.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a real thing. The thing about the time travel is a very serious thing, because there are parallel you can call them dimensions if you want, or timelines.
Right, got it. Very interesting, all of this. Looking inside the picture below that of giant rock, Frank Kreitzer, is it Kreitzer or Kreitzer?
Kreitzer.
Kreitzer, all right. There he is, the lone prospector. Wow. Okay, let's go back up the page here. I just wanted to check that Gabriel Green thing out. That guy is, I like that. Oh, here's a funny thing. At the bottom of the flyer, be sure to hear Gabriel blow his horn for a better way of life for all people at the second national convention, the Amalgamated Flying Saucer Clubs of America, the Shrine Auditorium, August 13 and 14, 1960. Wow. That's a big venue. I got to read just a little bit more of this. If you are fed up with the same hypocritical promises offering you a welfare state and plenty for everybody, but they can't tell you how to pay for it without raising your taxes or the national debt beyond our ability to pay. If you want adequate school rooms and unlimited education for all, medical and dental care, better housing, highways, and sounds like infrastructure to me, doesn't it? And transportation, more jobs and shorter work hours, better wages and more profits, retirement from work without reduction in living standard. Can you spell the word pensions? And 100% distribution of all that our advanced technology is capable of producing. And I'll jump to the end. Then vote for and work to elect Gabriel Green for President of the United States of America in 1960. Well, Gabriel, if you're listening in somehow, somewhere, well done. An honest man.
Yes, and when we look at the national debt today, I don't know what it's at. 20 trillion, I guess.
Yeah, and we just found out a month ago that 21 trillion is missing from the DOD and HUD, stolen. So, yeah, there's more money out there than, it's like oil, we'll never run out of it. There's wealth all over the place. It's just, it's all a game, It's just a scam. Sickening. All right, let's
and
go
they,
down.
And they said that, and people back then were saying that he was crazy, but
Gabriel Green was crazy?
Oh. Yeah, you know, people thought, you know, because he was saying he communicated with extraterrestrials, that he was the crazy one. But looking back, we, you know, in hindsight, with the $21 billion or trillion dollars,
we're
debt,
in the hands of criminals and looting, robbery, theft, crime unlimited now, and it was extant back then, but it's way worse now. Here's a letter underneath the photograph at the top article. And I'm wondering what this... Shall I read one of these? What do we got here?
Oh, yes. This was a letter to Long John Neville, who was a radio announcer on
New York?
KOR in New York.
He was the first... WOR. He was the first... real, honest, controversial talk show host who wasn't afraid of the paranormal or UFOs or anything.
Yes, that was the bread and butter of the whole show. And this is a letter from civilian saucer intelligence member Sterling Warren, recommending that Mr. George Van Tassel be a guest on the program, and it was sent in care of Augie Roberts.
The same photographer. Yeah.
The very same, yes, the very same one. And it's a great letter. It's a recommend...
Let me read it. This is to Long John Neville, WOR in New York. The purpose of this letter is to introduce you to the name of George Van Tassel of Giant Rock, California, and to brief you on his activities in the field of outer space contact. Also to advise you that Mr. Van Tassel will be in this area, New York and New Jersey, for 4 days, October, blah, blah, blah. He may be available for interviews on your 1 to 5 a.m. program. Long John was on all night long, 5 hours. That he may be available for interviews then, if you care to make arrangements, blah, blah, blah. Undoubtedly, if you decide to invite him to the program, you will want to speak with him in advance. If you will contact this writer, I shall be able to get word to him that you are interested, etc. So what happened? Did he get on?
Yes. They got him on. They did get him on, and he came into contact then with for the first time with our friend Howard Menger.
Uh-huh.
And then later Howard Menger would appear, return the favor, and go out to the West Coast and appear at Giant Rock, and Van Tassel also helped Howard Menger to organize the first East Coast Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention that was held in September of 1958 out at his property in Highbridge.
That was held at his property, too. Interesting. Okay, now we have also Adamski going back east and making speeches and presentations. I don't know what years those were, but he had to be connected with all these people.
Oh yes, and the reason that Adamski didn't make it to the first Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention in April of 1954 was because he was out on a tour of Europe. He was preparing for that. Lou Zinstag was in Switzerland coordinating events, and then he was with the Flying Saucer Club in Detroit, getting ready to go to New York to fly across the Atlantic.
Wow, this is really a very interesting period of relatively recent American history that nobody pays attention to anymore. So I'm really glad to have you on, Ray, tonight to talk about these things. It's a lot of fun. It's fascinating. This is the age of the contactee, not the abductee. Just keep that in mind. And Van Tassel, I I wish I knew what it was. It was a son-in-law or somebody with a name Van Tassel. So it had to be a nephew. That's probably what it was. And I met this guy, and he as a child, he had spent many times at Giant Rock.
Wow.
So.
Well, the one thing that's interesting about this particular letter, because I did some research on Mr. Warren and civilian saucer intelligence, mm-hmm. that was the group that predated NICAP.
Mm-hmm.
The more skeptical Donald E. Keyhoe about the contactees.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see that there's some trepidation at the end of the letter, where he said that, you know, that he wanted to kind of keep it on the, you know.
Here, I'll read the end of it. He said, while he has maintained telepathic contact with outer space intelligences, including Ashtar, whom you have mentioned on your program, George Van Tassel is not an impractical man. Before his move with family to Giant Rock, he was engaged for 4.5 years in flight test work for Lockheed Aircraft in Burbank. He has a ranch at Yucca Valley. Definitely, he is not a wild-eyed visionary. He has, however, been studying and contacting outer space for the past 7 years at Giant Rock, his desert retreat, a former airport. This is the first visit to the East for some time. It will be a great loss to the people of the East if they are prevented from hearing him because of apathy or lack of sponsorship. Van Tassel is not primarily interested in making a profit for himself, although his experimental research laboratory in Yucca Valley can use funds from interested people. Mainly, though, he is coming here to speak and is worth listening to, in my opinion. Read his book, see if you agree. And this was written to Long John Neville. Okay.
Yes, yes. And then you see on the Mr. Warren's letter to Augie Roberts, the second paragraph, he said, "Note that I have not mentioned you as a sponsor for George Van Tassel, but only as a contact. Also, I have requested that both your name and mine be kept in confidence," because at that time the contactees were under pressure and under fire from fellow ufologists.
Yeah, well, that was probably done with controlled opposition injected into ufology to create problems. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Keep people divided, arguing. That's what they do on the internet now all the time.
Oh, yes, yes. It doesn't make sense that travelers from another dimension or another planet coming to Earth would never stop and talk to anybody.
No, it doesn't make sense at all when you think about it. Of course not.
And so when you look at the position of civilian saucer intelligence and NICAP at that time, it's very, very hard to comprehend. And beside the contactees inspired the imagination, the hopes and dreams of millions of people. And why throw a monkey wrench into it?
Well, Van Tassel apparently didn't want to hold any more conventions at Giant Rock. Here's a little text. "We had determined not to hold any more spacecraft conventions at Giant Rock Airport because of the amount of work and expense involved. Hundreds of letters have been pouring in from all over the country wanting to know the date of this year's convention. So, under the pressure of so many who enjoy this event, we have decided that the majority will rule. We have set the date for the 5th convention for Memorial Day weekend. That falls on a Friday, May the 30th, Saturday, May 31st, and Sunday, June 1st. Will be the convention dates. We know this 3-day weekend We'll find hundreds of our friends arriving early to take advantage of the extra day. The public is welcome as usual, so invite your friends and spread the word. Bring camping equipment and plenty of blankets. You can always take them off if it's warm, but you can't put them on if you don't bring them. The end of May is normally perfect weather, both day and night. No gasoline or oil will be on sale at Giant Rock at the time of the convention, so fill your tanks. Motels are available in 29 Palms, Joshua Tree, and Yucca Valley if reserved in advance. We cannot reserve them for you, so write or phone to the Chambers of Commerce of the above towns. As long as we are doing it again, let's make this the biggest convention of them all. Be seeing you here, G.W. Van Tassel.
Now, he went on to have 23 conventions. He didn't miss a year since 1954.
Wow.
And even while he was getting older and it was more difficult, he still went ahead and did it anyway. The last one was in 1977.
They must have been phenomenally fun things to go to. Fascinating. And people sleeping on the ground, camping out. Just amazing when you think about it, how it must have been. A lot of people must have flown in there. I'll bet Howard Hughes flew in, one of those at least, to attend, and probably no one recognized the man.
Oh, yes, and they did have many planes come in, fly in, even for the first one. I have a photograph of that 1954 with all the planes lined up, more than usual, just filling up the whole place.
Huh. It's out in the middle of the desert, friends. Look at the pictures. And I've got that other story up there now. Reload the homepage, look under Dr. Ray Keller, and you'll see it. The Intrigue of Giant Rock, and there's some really phenomenal pictures there of the Integratron, which we'll talk about. The Integratron it's one of those Tesla kind of things that we just don't know enough about, even to this day. Okay.
Yes, they had stripped the place clean, and the only thing that was left was...
I think we lost Ray there, right on cue. We'll get him right back. They had stripped the place clean. I wonder who they would be. Sounds very much government to me. Okay. Very good. All right, I'm looking at this material. Just fascinating. Take a look at the pictures, and we will continue with more in just a few minutes. Fun evening, don't we, with Dr. Raymond Keller? Fascinating about the history of early ufology, the age of the contactees. How many of you would like to have gone to an end of May, Memorial Day weekend, Giant Rock UFO festival? That would have been just amazing. You didn't get to go, did you, Ray?
I did get to go to one in 1968,
You went to Giant Rock.
Gray Barker was at that one.
Uh-huh. Well, tell me how it was.
Well, it was kind of like a carnival, really.
Sure.
There's ufologists from everywhere. They have contests and which woman is going to be the queen of outer space, and it's really something. So yeah, even if you didn't believe in UFOs, I mean, it would be entertaining.
Oh, I think it had to be. Come on. You go to some, I haven't been to many. I don't go to them, but these big events where they have, 20 different presenters and all that. And I went to one once, and I won't mention any names. And I left that very day. I didn't spend the night, nothing. It was just not my kind of thing. But Giant Rock, to me, would have been fascinating. Yes, there are strange, unusual, non-scheduled people in the audience doing odd things, but there probably were government people there, perhaps extraterrestrials in attendance. We don't know. We don't know.
Oh, yes, and the thing about it is that after 1978, when they closed the Integratron, a lot of stuff did turn up missing. They even ripped the floors out, and all that was left was looked like some kind of Tesla coil. It was about eight foot long, just bent and propped up against a wall.
Huh.
So they did rifle through there and get everything they could get their hands on, whoever it was.
Well, government people of some kind, men in black, I don't know.
Yes. Well, extraterrestrials were noted to frequent the location, and my third book, Cosmic Rays, Excellent Venus Adventure, tells about one incident.
Uh-huh.
And I have another document with me that might be of interest. George Van Tassel is describing a UFO landing on at Giant Rock near his home, and it's titled Water Again, and apparently there had been a number of reports of spacecraft landings, and right. It was stated by witnesses that the space people were observed taking water aboard the spacecraft. And so this is a testimony from various neighbors, and including Van Tassel himself, about missing water from their water tanks. And he said, well, in one neighbor's house, their property was fenced, and they had five dogs, and the dogs never barked, and they were missing about 4,000 gallons of water.
Right.
That was just filled the day before. And he said, the fact that their tank was emptied without their dogs barking proves that no mere mortal took their water. It reminds me of the night the spacecraft landed here at Giant Rock. None of the three dogs barked on that night either. We have at least nine witnesses, and our neighbors have at least four to the truth of these facts. You can draw your own conclusion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All we are going to do is keep the tanks full in case our celestial friends need some more good desert water.
Wow.
And the one he was referring to about the UFOs landing was during the first interplanetary spacecraft convention. There was a huge explosion seen out on the desert floor, and it was photographed by some reporters from Los Angeles newspapers, and then some entities were photographed out on the desert floor, and the pictures appear for the first time in in that book.
All right, very good. Next up, we have about 15 minutes left, so let's scroll on down. Tell us where you'd like to take us next, Ray.
Okay. All right, let's see when we're scrolling down.
There's an invitation, May 31st, June 1st, the Giant Rock Airport Spacecraft Convention. That was Gray Barker's, his records. Then we have a color picture of the Integraton. Oh, a quick question. Since the rock split, did that compromise the underneath residence, or was that okay?
No, it did. It did compromise it because it's breaking the integrity of the crystal structure.
I see.
The crystalline structure of the rock, the granite. So it's reduced its electrical capacitance effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't store like it did before.
I understand.
It doesn't complete whatever kind of circuit was connected to the mm-hmm. extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm.
You know, people who want to laugh and dismiss this whole thing as some kind of a fraud or a figment of people's imaginations, no, it can't be. There are too many people involved. Same old story. This has been going on forever. Maybe hundreds of thousands of years, visitation. Nothing of a big surprise there. Some fascinating photographs here. Thank you. You're sharing some things that I'm going to guess haven't been seen before.
Some of them haven't. And on the other article that's attached there, Venusian spaceships are landing. This is the second in a series of articles that I've been writing, and it has a picture of one of the frequent attendees at the Giant Rock, and an extraterrestrial by the name of Commander Aura Raines, and you could see her picture there.
Now that's we have about four links under Dr. Raymond Keller. We have Giant Rock, which is the page we're on now. Then we have Venusian spaceships are landing. Then I've got Dr. Ray's books up there on a page. And then the article, The Intrigue of Giant Rock. It's a very good article. Venusian spaceships are landing. Now, that's your article, Ray? You're writing that?
That's my article. And I frequently write for various UFO blogs.
Uh-huh.
This is phantomsandmonsters.com, and another one that I write for is Alternate Perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
This particular article has some photographs. This is Mrs. She went by the name of, also known as Mrs. Evelyn Smith.
Right.
And she attended numerous flying saucer conventions around the United States throughout the 1950s, even as purported to have been at Howard Menger's Highbridge flying saucer convention.
This is another terrific article. I think what we should do is put this on hold. There's Gene Dixon, for goodness sakes. We should put this on hold till you come back next time, and let's keep moving on that the main set of images and photos. Move down. I want to get those covered tonight if we can.
Okay.
So I read from Spacecraft Convention Announcement, that one by George Van Tassel. College Progress, is there something there we need to see?
Oh, yes. This is 1958. Now we're moving ahead here, and the plans are underway by the Council of the College of Universal Wisdom,
right?
To build the Integratron according to the directions that were provided by Solgonda of Venus.
Did people in the 50s, when all this talk about Venus and Venusians and Venusian saucers, they understood the party line was that Venus was utterly uninhabitable. Correct? That was known.
Most scientists were telling them, but not
right.
all.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. There's a really nice color picture of the Integratron here. As well, a nice color picture of giant rock. And that has to be about 1954, that color picture of giant rock?
Oh, yes, that's 1954.
How did I get that? You know how? I looked at that Chevrolet in the front. That's a 54 Chevy. Look at that. All right. Very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, speaking of cars, in the on that that article that I just wrote, it has Commander Ora Raines losing the beret and letting down her hair, and she really looks quite the shizzle there, and she's standing next to
her. What is she? What was that word, Ray?
She looks the shizzle.
Shizzle. I haven't heard that one before. That's a good word.
She's standing next to her 1954 Bel Air white top convertible.
All right, I got to go back
wearing
and look
a,
at this.
Wearing a Mickey Mouse Club T-shirt.
Cute. All right, this is in Venusian Spaceships Are Landing, the article. I got to find this. All right, how far down do I go for this picture?
About halfway.
Oh, there she is. And she's got a black, some kind of black pants and a Mickey Mouse T-shirt, and her hair is down, and that's her 54 Chevy. She had some money.
Oh yes.
She was not poor. She had class, and there's the word shizzle. Cute. I haven't seen that before. All right, very good. Let's go back to the main page now. And where do you want to go to down here on this page?
Let's take a look at that the Integratron when they were laying the foundations for it.
Okay. There's a picture of a round circle in the middle of the desert, and they've poured some concrete there. And that's the foundation for the Integratron.
Yes, yes. And then you could see, it was definitely going to be more than an observatory. And you could see that the proceedings are the official publication of the College of Universal Wisdom, mm-hmm. which was incorporated in the state of California as a non-sectarian and non-profit organization for parapsychological and physical research.
That was
so
fantastic.
They realized that there was more to spacecraft than just mm-hmm. nuts and bolts.
Right. That was the spiritual side, so to speak, I guess.
Yeah, so this is predating Ivan Sanderson and John A. Keel uh-huh. and Jacques Vallée, and they knew what was going down.
This fifth annual interplanetary spacecraft convention. This is the one that he didn't want to hold, but the demand was so much that he had to. So we've got the foundation of the Integratron, and Van Tassel. Again, explained that he got the information telepathically.
Yes, he did, and that term channeling hadn't been developed yet, and I think Van Tassel was actually the first one to use that term.
Hmm. He was an amazing man. So was Adamski. Were they friends? Must have been, huh?
Yes, they were, and they all knew each other well. At when Adamski held his big conference at Mount Palomar at the mm-hmm. Skyline Lodge in mm-hmm. On the 7th and 8th of August, 1954, you had Truman Bethlehem, George Adamski, and Daniel Fry. From the understanding groups
mm-hmm.
all together, presenting their information to those assembled.
When you went there, and said 70, what you were there?
Oh, 60 of 68.
68. How many of the old timers were still going?
They were starting to like Adamski had passed three years before, and so there was a different crowd there. But
you met Van Tassel, right?
Yes, I've seen him.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Barker, Gray Barker.
Mm-hmm.
So it was. It was a new age for ufology. It was under a lot of stress at that time because, of course, the Vietnam War was going on, and 1968 was a year of turbulence and revolutionary changes here in the United States. And the following year, the Condon Report, Dr. Edward U. Condon,
sure,
from the University of Colorado, came out with his report urging the Air Force to defund and to cease any further investigations of UFOs. And the Condon Report really treated the contactees very poorly and didn't put them in a very good light, debunking, ridiculing what they had to say, but nevertheless, that same report wasn't able to explain 12% of all the cases that that were investigated. So, even there, they didn't succeed in that. But
right.
But ufology was taking a beating overall in the U.S. and in the eyes
of the
public.
Well, that was when the lid came down in the late 60s. They started to close off information. Newspapers weren't reporting it like they were in the 50s. Things changed.
Yes, it was a sad time as far as UFO research goes.
What was it like under Giant Rock? How big of a room was that down there?
Oh, it's I would say maybe about about
how many
like
people could fit in there?
Oh, they could fit about maybe 40 people in there.
Okay.
And he had a library down there.
Mm-hmm. When they had the event, they must have had a presenter's platform outside, because there were a couple hundred people there, I'm sure. And
yes, and they had folding chairs, and they did have a platform built up there.
And above all, in the 60s, it must have been absolutely gorgeous at night in the desert.
Oh yes, you could see the whole spiral arm of the Milky Way, and there wasn't as many lights and artificial light to ruin the view.
Yeah, city lights, sure. Yeah,
as there is now.
Yeah, it's hard to see the sky for its glorious self right now. The Integratron, 50 foot in diameter. The research laboratory will be nearly four stories high and is 42 feet in diameter. The second floor is 10 feet from the ground, and the structure from there up is a dome with a 22-foot radius. Circling the outside of the building at the second-story level will be a 50-foot diameter disk, which will rotate around the building to ground out all static electricity within the building and provide a division line to stabilize the Earth's crust magnetic currents. Now, you described some kind of we have about a minute left, some kind of a Tesla-looking machine or device in there?
Yes, I guess you'd call it like a Tesla coil, some
uh-huh.
kind of Tesla coil.
Right, right.
Like you'd see on like a Jacob's ladder kind of experiment.
Sure, I understand.
And just a bent one leaning up against a wall.
So somebody wrecked it.
Yeah, somebody just, you know, stepped on it and pulled it, I guess.
Well, unfortunate. You were very, very fortunate to have attended something like that. That's really interesting. Did you listen to all the speakers or most of them? How long were you there? The whole time?
Well, I was very young. I just went with my aunt.
And why did she go?
She was interested in life on other planets. She gave mm-hmm. me a book about the solar system mm-hmm. When I was only 10.
Wow.
And when I went there with her, I was 14.
You know, we had a public, even though we've been exposed to so much, the public back then was, in a way, more open-minded because they were reading about these phenomenal sightings all the time in the papers in the 1950s. They constantly were reporting on unidentified flying objects.
Oh, yes. It was really a wondrous time. But by the time that article appeared about me in the National Enquirer in 1969, the National Enquirer was about the only publication that you could really find information about UFOs.
And a lot of it good information. The Enquirer gets mocked all the time, but we know now that it was essentially a CIA property, as most of the tabs are, and they would put good information there to see how they would float with the public, I think, was part of it.
Yes.
All right. Ray, we're out of time. Thank you very much. We'll have you back again soon, and we'll continue on this page. We have many more things to look at and talk about. It'll be fun, and we'll look at your new article as well. Thank you for this wonderful Valentine's program.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Ray. Thank you, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to be on the program and to speak with you about important subjects.
Thank you. Well, we'll continue very soon, so just stay in touch.
Thank you.
Okay, Ray. Thanks very much. All right, and again, happy Valentine's Day to all of you. I hope it was a nice day and was a nice Valentine's present from Dr. Ray Keller to all of us. So I hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back with you tomorrow night and carry on. Have a good time tomorrow, and we'll be with you in 21 hours.